This segment of the Henry Raine Show is brought to you by Bike Federal, the Bitcoin ATM company, bringing Bitcoin to a location near you. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Henry Raine Show right here on WWPR 1490 AM, the second half of the Monday afternoon power block. The real power, 4:05 p.m. talking markets, because they cover everything in the marketplace, in all markets. But here we do a weekly roundup of Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, and blockchain news and more. Well, what happened this week? Bitcoin sees a new difficulty adjustment. Is it bullish? Coinbase considers becoming a publicly traded company. Digital currency payments may become a reality for G20 members. And asset management giant Fidelity Investments holds about a 10% stake in a Canadian-based publicly traded Bitcoin mining firm, according to a regulatory finding. Well, what does all that mean? Well, I've got just the person to help sort it out. Well, that's, if you're trained properly, that would get your attention, because that's the theme music of Talking Markets, and that would mean only one thing. It's not Mark, it's Andrew. Andy, the former trader formerly known as Goldbug One, for the old-timers there, and how you doing?
I'm doing good, Henry. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. It was a little tough sorting which direction the show was going to go, because there's lots of news about altcoins this week, but trying to explain some of them on the show, it decided it was a lot easier just to talk about digital payments, which we have been, talk about Bitcoin, which we have always have been, and some of the other things going on around the world. And yeah, the altcoins are exciting for people, but I think, what is Bitcoin's market cap now? About $170 billion, somewhere around there? Yeah, give or take $20, $30 billion. I mean, that's a good-sized publicly traded company. And, of course, we're not making light of it because it's, you know, well, I've rebuilt my position in it. I'm looking forward to where it's going to be going. But, you know, these other altcoins, yeah, they went from $1 to $2, or maybe even $1 to $10. But when you look at the market cap, it's, do you have Link on there?
Chainlink, yes. It's a $2 billion market cap.
Okay. So I mean, you know,
that's a decent. You know, that's a small cap. I mean, it's not small fry. I mean,
it's great to make a 10,000% return, but
yeah, I just don't. Tether has a bigger market cap than.
Well, Tether is the original stable coin.
Yes, yes. Huh. And still stable.
Yes, amazingly. We had a few shows about that over the retrospective of whatever it's been since 2017.
Tether was a little volatile there at times, but Tether has come through.
So, well, what will we talk about today?
I tell you, I've got news for you.
Well, just today, that would be Monday, a new Bitcoin difficulty adjustment, I guess would be implemented is the word I'm searching for there. It's the latest in a series of bullish moves that underline miner confidence. Well, that's what this person says anyway. The event was just happening really as we went to the mics here to partake and give our takes on everything. Estimates suggest a difficulty uptick of around 9.5%. Well, what does that really mean? Well, it's stronger than the previous move 2 weeks ago, because about every 2 weeks is when they make this adjustment. And on the way to matching last month's 15% surge, which was the largest since 2018, everybody thought that was bullish. But then the previous one wasn't, just sort of flat. And people were like, oh, the sky's going to fall. Or the rug's going to be pulled out. Or we're going to hit the tree on the corner. What is, you know, some cliche or something is things were going to happen. Well, the network hash rate reached an all-time average high last week. Another thing that's good because you want a lot of activity and you want miners to still want to mine even though the difficulty's higher. But I don't know. Do you think that's bullish?
Yeah, I think it's just clickbait.
Well, let's not undersell our lead story.
Oh, okay. I don't. You know.
Well, it's important, but you need to be listening here so that we can interpret it for you.
I think it's
more important when it goes south.
Yeah.
More difficulty
means more miners are mining, correct?
I think it means there's a more of a demand for transactions.
Yeah.
That would be a good thing.
Yeah, that's positive.
The Packer Bell here in the studio that we replaced the Commodore 64 with, you know, we set that to mining in the spare time because there's a lot of downtime around the studio.
I made one ripple.
I'm expecting us to get a block one of these days so that I could hear the groans of the HP when the difficulty of the...
Yeah.
Hewlett-Packard, that's... HP, I mean, that's a couple different names than Packer Bell. Was there a Hewlett?
Well, there was Bell.
And then Packer Bell.
Then Packer Bell.
And then Hewlett Packard.
Then Hewlett Packard.
So where'd Hewlett come from? Jackson Hewlett?
Maybe.
No, I don't think
Packard, I hope it wasn't the car.
What? All right. Well, see how much enlightenment we just gave you? Just for
people
a couple minutes of your time. But now let's talk about something that should really get people excited. Coinbase. Well, no, not Coinbase by itself.
But
Coinbase is scoping out the landscape and looks to be making the move to finally become a publicly traded company. Now, this has been talked about ever since the boom of 2017. When is it going to come public? Before, and to give context to the background here, there is a place called SharePost.com. It's where people can sell, like a lot of these companies that haven't gone public yet, but there's been stock options, employees have received a lot of shares, there's shares that have been bought in, what do we call them, secondary filings?
Mm-hmm.
Or even the original venture capitalists may have some of these shares, and they want to free up cash. So sharespost.com is where a lot of pre-IPO companies, you can buy the shares. You have to be an accredited investor. Almost every company, you have to buy $100,000 worth of stock. But it's interesting because it gives you an idea of where they value the company. Now, some people may look at the Nextdoor app, and that's one of the ones they have. Circle, the cryptocurrency exchange, used to be on there, but somehow it just disappeared. Yeah. So be careful where you spend your $100,000. But Coinbase, there are shares available there. I have not offered to buy $100,000 of Coinbase.
But you could.
If the stars aligned, maybe I could. But I don't want to. We could form you can do an LLC, so you and I could go in together and we could buy that $100,000.
Yeah.
If
you join with me, your $100,000 we'd probably be able to buy 10 because, you know.
We can
join together
and show you how to make $50,000 out of $100,000.
That's right.
But
what are the shares going for?
Well, I didn't look it up, but last night I think they were saying it was either $33 or $36 is where they are currently valued. And they've had a few different secondary offerings, so mm-hmm. somebody was actually paying that price. And I'm sure you can trust the CEO, Brian Armstrong, not to bring it public at a cheaper price than what anybody paid for it. Anyway, it's the latest start to approach public markets. The digital currency exchange company could follow Palantir. I looked at that one, too. That one was, I think, it was only like $11 or something. So only like, well, you're buying by the dollar, so you could get almost 10,000 shares for your $100,000. Mm-hmm. Now, Coinbase, you'd only be able to get, 3,000 shares or something. Hardly be able to take up a corner of your account in the dungeon there. Anyway, it's Palantir is nearing its IPO. They're the secretive data-focused unicorn, as in value-wise, where Coinbase is the secretive your money-focused exchange. Anyway, the trading platform could pursue a public debut later this year or early next year. Plans remain fluid, as it's reported. It has been in talks to hire investment banks and law firms. But, interestingly enough, they may try and do something else. They may do a direct listing for its shares. So, that
was... Who did that recently?
Spotify.
Spotify, that's right.
They had a lot of shares circulating, and they just opened up to let the people that have it sell it.
Sell it, yeah.
And it worked out pretty well for them.
Yeah.
No fees from the underwriters.
No.
And a lot of these companies are worried about they're leaving money on the table because all the underwriters want to have a low price so that all their favorite clients that they sell it to get a quick, make a quick dollar on it.
Mm-hmm.
And Coinbase says, anybody's going to make a quick dollar, it's going to be us.
It's going to be us, yeah.
So, you know, what isn't mentioned in this article is a SPAC, a special purpose acquisition company, like Virgin Galactic was brought public by a SPAC. This would be a great great one if somebody can convince them that they're the right way to go. Although, like Chamath Palihapitiya, the billionaire that did Slack and Virgin, he had the SPAC that did Virgin Galactic, but he's a multi-billionaire. He's brought a lot of big companies like Box to public. He's got a great track record. So, now, he has a couple SPACs that are trading currently, and I actually have shares of both of them. So I would think it would be great if he would bring Coinbase public, but he only raised like $800 million for his SPAC. Yeah, so I don't think that's the kind of money that gets Brian Armstrong at Coinbase to give you the time of day.
Nope.
No. I think it, I believe, according to this, Slack was a direct listing company, too.
Okay, yeah.
And that was Chamath. Well, who knows what will happen. Anyway, Coinbase is valued at $8 billion. And how is it valued at $8 billion? I can almost hear you say that.
I don't know. You got to see the financials.
Well, you got to, you know, it's not just that. What is it? 0.5% commission they take on Coinbase Pro or the 3% and the 5% spread of the bid and the ask that they take on Coinbase itself, or some of those other things. They're not just making money that way. Well, they have been defending themselves this week because of the analytics software that they have entered into contracts with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the U.S. Secret Service. And so, of course, they're keeping your data private. They've anonymized you, but they are selling data of what goes on in their exchange and around their exchange to the government. Now, it's interesting, this same CEO, Brian Armstrong, that we talked about in the previous story, this is how he defended himself, or not himself, but the company's policy. Well, he took to Twitter, which is what profound thought goes on to talk about
the Enlightenment age. In Twitter.
Yeah, it was like Jefferson.
Lincoln.
I was trying to think of the European great minds, Voltaire. You know all the big ones.
Socrates.
Voltaire. He's been doing some great stuff.
Yeah.
Coinbase Analytics, Samuel Johnson. Yeah. Thomas Paine.
Thomas Paine.
They're all doing great work.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah. Great. Anyway, Coinbase Analytics, the company's practice of licensing out the platform, explained why crypto exchanges must have some sort of analytics software to comply with banking regulations. So if it's sitting around, let's make a little side hustle on it.
Absolutely.
Right. And quoting Brian, exchanges that maintain connections into the existing financial system, the ability to connect to your bank account, do wires, et cetera, so you can convert fiat to crypto, need to follow anti-money laundering laws. And this often includes utilizing blockchain analytics software for transaction monitoring. See, by that time, with the attention span of people these days, they didn't even get to the end of the tweet. This is a lot that could be better about existing. There is a lot that could be better about anti-money laundering laws. Have I ever talked on the radio before? We didn't create them, but those are the rules to operate, blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, that was like washing your hands of everything. But what he had said, in essence, to follow that is, well, if you don't like what the analytics software is saying about you, why don't you use privacy coins? Which, I'm sure... And then, but you still got it coming and going if it's on their exchange.
Yeah,
do they even have a privacy coin on them?
Zcash.
Okay, there you go.
I think Dash is on there, too, though.
No,
that's semi-private.
That, yeah. Who's the other one besides Zcash?
Monero.
There you go.
Monero's really the true privacy.
Now, it's really been a long time since I've talked about altcoins.
They don't have them on there.
Yeah. Anyway, they came under fire over the weekend. Armstrong added the expenses to build an analytics platform, so they wanted to recoup loss by selling it. And it's important to have it. It means to encourage more interaction between fiat and crypto and tell the government about it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Transactions around public blockchain are already traceable, even if the exchange never sold its analytics platform to the other parties. That's like the guide on in the Himalayas. See, we can take the map and go yourself. So here, Department of Homeland Security, look at all these hashes.
There you
go. We have our genie over here in a bottle.
That's right. $29.95.
So his actual quote was, if people want true privacy, that is what privacy coins are for. I'm a fan of privacy coins because I think everyone should have more financial privacy, just not on our platform. It will be similar to how the Internet moved from HTTP to HTTPS over time.
Yeah.
And, of course,
you know, because like you said this morning, though, I mean pre-show, when we were talking here, you know, you say something on your phone.
Right. It's listening.
And it ends up on Facebook, an advertisement for you on your computer.
Yeah. The real question is it the Facebook app that's listening, or is it Android's listening to you and then selling it to Facebook?
Well, I have an Apple, and it does the same thing.
Yeah, the Facebook app is still the same question, though.
Yeah.
But it was the New York Times or some big paper, they had their tech writer go to a company that, will analyze who's listening on your phone. And this was supposedly a sophisticated writer. He didn't write about tech forever. He thought he was doing just about everything you could to keep your phone private. And this company found 300 different applications on his phone that were monitoring him and tracking him. Because, I hate to use the Facebook app because it may not be there, but let's just say you have the XYZ app that does something that really helps you in your day-to-day work. And they may have sold your data to 10 other companies. So, you know, when you read your privacy agreement, give it to me now. And, you know, they can resell it. And then those 10, I don't think they went to this second level of stuff, but, you know, one of the 10 could then be reselling it to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So. But anyway, HTTP, now that's what you see up in those Internet addresses.
So what's the difference between HTTP and HTTPS?
Well, once you get to the address, the stuff that goes back and forth is encrypted.
Okay.
So like your Internet service provider knows where you went. They know the address. They don't know what you said back and forth. So, like, if you're going to a porn site, not that any of us would do that, your internet service provider would know you went to a porn site. The question is, I don't know if some of the apps on your phone or the cookies on your computer would know, they would know that. Would you start getting ads that way from them? I don't know how, I don't know if it goes, if the actual address routing goes beyond the internet service provider. But what I do, because of HTTPS, I go into my settings on my my desktop and my laptop, and I set it to Cloudflare. So everything my internet service provider sees is going back and forth to Cloudflare, and then Cloudflare, according to what they say, keeps no record of you. Everything is gotten rid of by within a 24-hour period, and they don't sell your data. So you do that, don't you?
I think I have Cloudflare.
Mozilla, the default
is Cloudflare.
Yeah, it's I forget what it's DNS over HTTPS is what they call it. Everybody's writing this down. There'll be a quiz at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's why. And of course, Cloudflare. If you listen to Talking Markets,
that's right.
Been one
up,
of their
up,
picks.
Up.
Done really well, except for the last 2 hours of the day today, like everything else. Hi. Oh, what's going on? We're ripping through this stuff today. We've talked a lot about digital currency payments recently. CBDC.
Cannabis.
CBD is what TJ sent us.
Yes. Thank you, TJ.
Yeah, it works well.
It actually fixed
that. That was the ointment.
Everyone has
surprisingly worked well.
Yeah.
Took me a long time to try it.
This
is just. But no, TJ came through.
Yeah.
All right, digital currency payments may become a reality for G20 members before the next summit in Saudi Arabia. According to the Japanese Kyoto News on July 11th, officials revealed that the G20 summit from 19 countries and the European Union, that's interesting, the European Union is just considered one, but that's not surprising, will be laying the groundwork to accept digital payments. The changes are expected to begin in October, presumably at the G20 Finance Ministerial and Deputies meeting in Washington, D.C., before the next summit in Riyadh in November. So, let's see. That's not that far away.
Nope.
And digital payments? Now, I'm guessing that this means, like, government-to-government or bank-to-bank, central bank-to-central bank.
SWIFT.
According to the Japanese news outlet, the officials enacted the policy in response to China's progress on creating a digital yuan and Facebook's anticipated release of Libra. You can scratch that one. But the Chinese one, you need to watch out for. I would hope that we're getting a little bit more on the stick, about this here with our Fed and our central bank and the Treasury Department. But if they're moving on it, they start keeping it on the down low. So you see, I guess we officially announced this afternoon that we don't recognize China's claim in the South China Sea to wherever they say their boundaries are. I mean, we never have recognized it, but now it's like we're making a bold statement about it. I thought that was why I saw the market start to go down. And I was like, people are taking that seriously. And then I saw California was closing back down. I was like, it's not that.
Except for Elon Musk. He remains open.
Yes.
Or he'll just leave town.
Well,
he's actually building his new Cybertruck in Austin, I think. Austin, Texas. That's where it's going to be.
The South China Sea, I mean, I understand that that's a pretty aggressive by China on what they're doing. But to put it in context, you figure out what we did with the Panama Canal back 150 years ago or whatever it was, 125, I think, maybe. And if you look on a map of the South China Sea and where Indonesia is and some of those others, Malaysia and stuff, there's something called the Straits of Malucca. And it's not like the Straits of Hormuz and the Persian Gulf, which is real teeny tiny, and you got to get the ships in. But the amount of trade that goes through that the straits between those islands, you know, it's a huge part of the Chinese economy, which means it's a huge part of the global economy. So I don't know the resolution to this. I don't have an idea what the proper way to do it is. But it is, if you're going to go after it, you're really striking at a major vein and lifeblood of their, you know, plan for the next century. So I hope everybody knows what they're doing. What could go wrong?
Nothing.
Oh, speaking of what could go wrong, I was looking at an article. It sort of relates to what we did about AI and warfare, and not just how we might think about it, about how maybe with the guy flying the fighter jet, you know, he's going to be able to do it better and things like that. It was about turning over actual decision-making to the AI.
Well, like in War Games, remember that? Movie back in the 80s?
Yeah, but only on steroids to that.
Yeah.
Because it'll have all the pieces, and rather than, like, all these generals looking at the little, like, risk game on the big table, it'll be making those decisions. And I don't know how a human keeps up with what's going on.
I remember we had a philosopher. We had to actually write about that in philosophy class way back in college. And God, I can't believe it's way back in college now.
You can't believe you were in philosophy class.
Oh, yeah, I had to take it. Actually, I had great philosophy. Dr. Fritz, still remember him, really influential.
Was it here?
Yeah.
I had Dr. Fritz.
Did you?
Yeah, he must have been really old by the time you got to him. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because about, what, 3 years ago? Maybe 3 years ago? 2 years ago. I was out at Lakewood Ranch, and here I am in Publix. And guess who's there?
He was?
Yes. And I saw him. I said, Dr. Fred? And he goes, yes. I said, oh, my God, you are probably one of the most influential professors I've ever had in my college. And he started crying. Made me tear up.
Oh.
He was. He was one of the most. I took both of
his my sister babysitted his kids.
Yeah. He was
and she was 10 years older than me.
Yeah, he was old back in the day
and
when
I
was in college. But he looks the same.
I'm 13 or 14 years older than you.
Yeah, he looks the same.
So I had him in 1976 or 7.
Yeah.
And she would have had him in, like, 66. And you had him when?
Early 90s? 80s? Maybe the late 80s.
Okay, so 66 to, let's say, 1990 would be 25 years. And then how long after that did you see him?
I saw him just maybe 2 years ago. Lakewood Ranch, Publix.
So another 30 years?
25.
50-plus years from when my sister had his class, and he was already a professor then. Wow.
He had to be in his 80s. But he looks the same.
Well, maybe to you.
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting class, too. I mean, you had to read all the books. And
Right, we're certainly digressing.
Yeah, we always,
how unlike us. But there was something about where, you know, you were supposed to, he was saying, you can write about some authors and that have a philosophical and you do whatever the assignment was. And you know who Hermann Hesse was? That was like a 70s thing. He wrote Siddhartha, a lot of Indian philosophical influence in his books. And I was reading them at the time. I was like, Hermann Hesse? And Dr. Fritz goes, no. I was like, oh. What? Didn't even offer me an explanation on why.
We got something in the secret chat group here.
What? What?
He says he is one of those immortals.
He's immortal?
Yeah.
Who was saying that?
It must be Dr. Frith.
No. Maybe he had his consciousness put into a computer.
Yeah.
And he's in the internet. He's in your phone.
He could be.
He's sitting on top of the Facebook app right now.
Yeah, it could be.
He's waiting for you to hit like. Anyway, just to wrap up, back to the AI. So, and the Chinese are working on the same thing. So imagine with all these hundreds of islands around the South China Sea, and their navy is being controlled by AI, and ours is being controlled by AI, not to mention the anti-aircraft, the anti-missile stuff, mm-hmm. all those things that are going to be, it's like, you
what
sure, yeah, I'm sure they're all well-programmed. Anyway. Speaking of well-programmed, Fidelity Investments. You can take that segue if you want. Asset Management holds a 10% stake in a Canada-based publicly traded Bitcoin mining firm. The company Hut 8 had to file an alternative monthly reporting with the Ontario Securities Commission, and that was when everybody found out that Fidelity had a 10% stake. And, of course, Fidelity's shrewd investment of this.
They didn't really at the forefront, though, of cryptocurrency because they allowed payment for their employees and in their snack bars and that at Fidelity and all that. So they were really at the – and they had mining operations going on in Fidelity in their offices.
In 2014.
Yeah.
It's been known to mining, although the investment is in this company, but Fidelity Investment's involvement in mining dates back to 2014. That's when Bitcoin was, what, $100, $400? I don't know. Could have been anything. Probably both. But they have 5,750,466 units, which is a share and a warrant, at a price of $1.46 per unit, raising around $8 million. That was the public offering. Let's see. I don't think that was what they issued to Fidelity Investments. Fidelity Investments got in there early, which I'm sure was a shrewd... let's see. It's currently trading at 82 cents a share. So, all right, Fidelity. Good luck on that one. This is one. Is it Donkey Coin or Doge Coin?
I don't know. Doggy, because it's man's best friend. That's what it was.
Okay. Well, did you hear about the TikTok campaign for Doggy Coin?
No.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of chatter, though, on Doggy Coin.
Yeah. Evidently, the TikTok challenges have a lot of different aspects to them.
Okay.
And this was the challenge to try and pump the price up to a dollar. Now, that might seem like not much, but... I think that was would have been a pretty big success if it had happened, because I believe that would have gotten it got as high as 10 cents. So, because it was trading for less than a penny, it looked like.
Yeah. But those that were in for less than a penny just tenfolded their money.
Well, you had to be quick, though.
Yeah.
But Jay Howe, he's the CEO of major crypto exchange OKEX, said, "Doggy Coin's no joke. Despite showing the lighter side of cryptocurrency, it's not a joke, and it's shown healthy development and longevity. It was a fork of Litecoin back in 2013, and so it's one of the oldest. It's used for tipping on Reddit and Twitter, and it's shown that it can achieve instant transfer for micropayments in a way that not many major cryptocurrencies can."
You know, that was one of the first coins that I actually saw when I was first getting into the crypto space. Doggy Coin, I was reading an article on that where there was a lot of Doggy Coin miners.
Mm-hmm.
And they had all these coins that they didn't know what to do with. And some lady in Arizona said, "Oh, you know what? I'm going to take Doggy Coin." And so she started taking Doggy Coin payments, and her revenue went up like 300% because there was a bunch of miners that had all this Doggy Coin. And so that's the only place.
What was she selling?
It was in Phoenix, Arizona. It was a restaurant.
Oh,
so
that makes you sound sunshine or something.
People, no, with all these people, they had no place to spend their Doggy Coin. You know, local. You know, you can't walk down this. You know, you can't really walk anywhere and spend your Bitcoin here. And she was the only one that had that. One of the first ones to take crypto payment. She took Doggy Coin, and there's a bunch of miners in the area, I guess, and tripled her business.
I wonder if she converted it to fiat.
I would imagine during the
I would hope so.
Up, yeah.
Anyway, the TikTok challenge, it was hashtag DoggyCoin TikTok challenge. Quote, this was the verbiage of the challenge. "Let's all get rich. DoggyCoin is practically worthless. There are 800 million TikTok users and invest just 25. Once the stock hits $1, you'll have 10 grand. Tell everyone you know." And no other wise sage investment advisor but Barstool Sports founder David Portnoy defined the campaign as a pure pump and dump and called DoggyCoin bubbly rosé. But the CEO of OKEX says, on the other hand, he shows great appreciation for the effort. I wonder if he got in on it. So I think as soon as it peaked, wherever it peaked, short of a dollar, and it's dropped 20% right away. Last story here. The Bank of England is considering issuance of a CBDC, according to the governor, Andrew Bailey. Bloomberg reports that during a student webinar, that what are they going to do, press releases? Bank of England, or a Twitter. Bank of England acknowledged that they are looking into the possibility of issuing a digital currency. We are looking at the question of, should we create a Bank of England digital currency? We'll go on looking at it, as it does have huge implications on the nature of payments in society. I think in a few years' time, we will be heading towards some sort of digital currency.
So I wonder if this is, they've printed so much money now, they print so much fiat. Because, hey, you know, it was just an attempt. You know, now we're going to go to digital, which is the real currency.
As opposed to what we do with the ledgers now.
Exactly. So I wonder if it's just a big...
Well, if we're actually on a blockchain, I don't know if the digital one is really on a blockchain either.
Yeah.
They just say they got their infrastructure down.
Mm-hmm.
They've got
I think Bitcoin's the way to go. I think Bitcoin's going to eventually, because what if a Satoshi hits a penny... Once Satoshi equals a penny, I think Bitcoin becomes worth $1 million, or is it 100,000? I can't remember. It's one of the two. So, one Satoshi, so, you know.
Well, the interesting thing about this story, well, the many interesting things, is that with Brexit, they don't have to ask the EU if they want to do this. They just go do it.
How's Brexit going, by the way?
I think it's sort of at the background after... Yeah, because they've been shut down for a while. They're just coming out loose now. Boy, you talk about people in the U.S. getting a little crazy. When some of those scenes when the bars and the pubs back. Oh, I mean, pub is a lot more of their culture there.
Yeah.
I mean, alcohol is a big part of our culture, but the pub culture is a whole different thing. And they were just shoulder to shoulder in the streets, and these are streets that were supposed to be have transportation on them. And crazy drunk British young women doing crazy drunk British young women things in the
Who's
street.
Who's banned from going over there? I'm just wondering if there's any cheap flights over there now.
You better figure out who you're going to quarantine with for 2 weeks. my daughter is over there, and she was supposed to come over in August. That's obviously out the window. And now, who knows... Because it's not like we just open up and they get to come over. They get quarantined when they go back. And when she married the young man, who, you know, was a great young man, you know, it's a hassle to travel to England. You know, I don't like standing in the customs or doing any of that stuff. And I like being able to drive up to the 7-Eleven, park right in front of the door, get out. They don't do that over there, evidently.
It's fringed upon.
Yeah, you're supposed to walk places.
What?
Yeah. And walk upstairs.
No elevators.
I thought they were a civilized country. But, you know, your daughter gets married, and you think, well, you know, it's modern. We'll get to see her. And then all of a sudden, something like this happens, and you don't know when they're going to see them again. So, anyway.
Well, she's still a U.S. citizen, right?
Yeah.
She can come back then. It's getting back there, though.
Yeah. Well, she's got a job over there and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So they have, you know, the European vacation style thing, so they're going to be here for 3 weeks. And, anyway.
Yeah.
Well, we ripped through the rundown here. Any other business we need to cover? What's Bitcoin going to do? You know,
I'm a little mixed on it, but I think it's, you know, if it pulls back, you got to watch the 8,600 level. I'd be a buyer there. If it pulls back to that 8,600, I'm a buyer. And it may pull back to the stock market, depending on what the stock market does. Even though they're not correlated, it seems that it's been a flight to cash kind of thing where everybody sells everything.
It's correlated with fear.
It's correlated with fear. So, yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. So, but it looks like it wants to move up longer and long term. I mean, we've been consolidating between... pretty much 8,600 and 10,000 for what? 4 months now?
May, June, July. I started building a position back up again. I looked at it just before we went on the air, the end of April.
Yeah. So you're in good money then.
Well, I didn't. I did a little over time. So
yeah.
The early money was doing good. Now it's just sort of been, you know, sideways, but... No, that's what
when it breaks out, it's going to be a very decisive move. I would not be surprised to see 15,000, 20,000 pretty quickly.
If it just continues to go sideways and then breaks out to the upside, I agree.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty quick. A lot of accumulation in here.
Well, that was a story that I didn't put into the rundown. That was Pompliano from Morgan Creek Capital was saying, because you hear this all the time, lots of accumulation. Nobody's talking about it. Lots of the big banks are accumulating. Nobody's talking about them. Well, you're talking about it. But they are. They're keeping it on the down low. So I'm like, oh, I hope so.
I heard that for so many years in the gold and silver market. All of the banks are, you know, they're accumulating stockpiles of gold.
So, well, I guess we're ready to wrap. You got anything else on your mind?
No, that's about it.
What is on the forecast for Talking Markets next week? Monday, 4:05 p.m.
Well, we'll see how this market does this week. Could be setting up for a nice pullback. And
buy a lot of Tesla? Or?
Tesla pulls back to 800, I'm buying.
What if somebody will sell their Tesla for Dogecoin?
Definitely.
Jumping in on
definitely,
that?
Definitely.
All right. We'll be back. Thanks to Andy. Thanks to you for listening. And we'll be back next Monday.